Yes, my name is Denise Addy, but I just want to correct one thing. I'm an occupational therapist assistant who's licensed here in the state. There is a difference between an occupational therapist and an occupational therapist assistant. The therapists that do the evaluations are notated as the, you know, evaluating therapist. So I do not evaluate a client when they first come to us. Another therapist does that, and then they can pass them over to me, and I can do all the treatment, which is the nice part. So I don't mind not being the boss. I used to be the boss a long time ago when I was an office manager, and that's kind of a thankless job. I like dealing right with the kids and the parents, and that's a lot of fun. And I am a grandma also, besides being a mother of two grown daughters, and they're both married, and one has a child, so I have one grandchild who's 10, and she has an IEP in school as well. My youngest daughter was what actually brought me to occupational therapy. She was born 2 months premature, to our shock, because my first child was full term, normal pregnancy, the whole bit, and you know, this child that was born a lawyer, let me tell you, she was just this brilliant kid. And then later I have another child who came early and had all these issues and problems, and I went through 5 years of occupational therapy with her, physical therapy, speech therapy, and I was working in an office. And when I saw what therapy had done for her and the resources in the community, it was a no-brainer. I said, oh my God, I have to do this for a living. And then that, in my mid-30s, I went back to school and became a therapist. So I'm happy, and I've been doing it for about 21 years now, and it's great. And the youngest daughter that needed those services, she's now 33 and married and hoping to have her own child. So there is a lot of success down the road. So just thought I'd share a little bit about that, about myself. The handouts in the blue folders, I provided you with pens and exactly the handout of what you want to know that are the tips that, well, my child doesn't like to have her hair shampooed or, you know, certain things like that. On one side, I've got listed some problems that you might be seeing, and the other side are the tips to help with that. So you don't really have to feel like you need to take notes. You can relax and listen. Because when I go to courses, I hate it that I have to sit and concentrate on taking the notes so much that I really can't enjoy just listening and absorbing. I can go home and review. So that's why I provided it that way to you. I'm not real good with questions all in the middle of this, and then I get off track what I'm doing. So that's why I gave you the pen. If you think of it, you have a question, if you can jot it down in there, because I might answer it by the time I finish the presentation. I might have already answered your question for you. But I'll be glad to take questions at the end, and I hope I know the answer. Because, you know, I'm not here to say I'm an expert or anything like that, but I do work with adults and children, and right now, children with autism, it's so prevalent that is the majority of our caseload all the time, especially with the kids. So I'll get started from here. Okay, let's see if I can be adept at this. All right, so basically I'm assuming most of us have know somebody or have a child with sensory challenges here, and I'm just gonna be real brief on this. I don't wanna bore you with like the diagnosis and, you know, unknown causes and things like that. So we'll kind of go quickly through this and get right to the tips. But it's just basically letting you know that it can coexist with other diagnoses that your child may or may not have, but maybe the neighbor's kid does or something like that, such as the autism spectrum, the attention deficit disorder, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, and it can also be the only problem they have. And you're saying, they're fine in every area, but, you know, they don't like tags on their clothes. They don't like their hair washed, things like that. So it might be the only thing you're seeing. But it does have to be diagnosed by the pediatrician. And a lot of times when the kids come to us for the first 3 years, this is just my interpretation, that it seems like the doctors are kind of reluctant to give the label. And they want to wait it out and see how the kids are developing and moving on and that. So even though we see it and we know what it is, we're still treating for it, even though we didn't get that official diagnosis yet from the doctor. There are three types of sensory processing patterns or subtypes. And you'll look at this and you might say, oh, that's my niece or oh, that's my child or, you know, whatever. But sensory modulation disorder, sensory-based motor disorder, and sensory perception and discrimination disorder. And I have a brief description of each. Okay, so sensory modulation disorder. That's involved in the central nervous system. It regulates your neural messages about the sensory stimuli that they're feeling, and it organizes the degree, the intensity, and the nature of our response to that. It's a very, very strong sensory like or dislike, and the reaction is atypical, where the rest of us would just go, no thanks, I really don't like that. They might really scream and have a meltdown that, you know, you want them to wear this certain shirt or a certain color or a certain texture, you know. So it's going to be an over-exaggerated response. Okay, so it goes on to say over-responsivity, under-responsivity, and sensory-seeking behaviors. We see a lot of that, sensory-seeking behaviors. The sensory-based motor disorder is a postural disorder, like motor activities with a fear of falling. Your child appears very timid compared to other children at the playground. They might be afraid to be on the swing or kind of hang from the monkey bars, and you're encouraging them, and you might be showing them examples with other kids, and you can't get past that. A dyspraxia is where they feel stuck and cannot figure out how to move their bodies for running, jumping, kicking a ball, and fine motor for coloring, puzzles, or oral motor for talking or eating activities. Sometimes it is that ability to move their tongue, to form words properly, or to move the food in their mouth. A lot of us take for granted eating and how much work our tongue actually does, that when we have adequately chewed it, the tongue just pushes it back for that swallow. Well, if you have a motor dyspraxia, the tongue is not working correctly on that. So you're not only going to work the gross motor of the other areas of the body, arms and legs and trunk, sometimes it's the whole mouth, and you're working on textures for swallowing. The nice part about working with kids, though, their job is play. So we're playing all day with the kids. They have no idea that it's actually work for them in some ways because it's hard on them. So when they come to see me for therapy, I always say, oh, thanks for coming for the play date today. I never say, let's go back and get started on work, you know, or let's go work on this or let's work on that. I always say, hey, you want to play in color? Or, hey, you want to jump on the trampoline? Because I want to start them out with their gross motor things and give them some sensory input. It might be crawling through a compression. It's rollers, and they're crawling through it, and it compresses. And even this old grandma gets down on the floor, and I crawl through there. Because sometimes if you're just asking them to do it, and there aren't any other kids there having therapy at the same time, and they don't see somebody else do it, they're not going to do it because they're not really sure what it's going to do to them. So I get down, I crawl through the compression machine so they can just see, and I take my glasses off, and I'm sorry, I forgot to put my name tag on, but I take my name tag off and my glasses, and I get down on the floor, and I crawl through it, and they laugh. They think that's hysterical to see somebody like me do those kinds of things. But to me, that's the whole point of connecting with them, and when you can connect with them, you're going to get more eye contact from them when you smile with them, and they're going to respond. Your sensory perception discrimination disorder. This is the capacity to interpret the meaning of sensory input and the perception of it. So discrimination is detecting the location, the intensity, and the timing of a specific sensory stimulus or between two or more stimuli. Some of the kids can't take more than one thing coming at them at a time. So if they're watching a video, some children respond to the bright colors, and that's too much stimulus. They're better off listening to something, but not watching and listening at the same time. That's two inputs, and for some kids, that's too much. So these children will break their toys, or they hold the dog or cat too tightly. They don't know their own strength. And we hear this a lot from the parents, that they're saying that, you know, little brother or little sister squeezing the new baby too hard. Because they don't know. They don't realize what their strength is, and it's a big input, you know. And so they're always having to have them back off and work on that. And it's not that they're doing it on purpose. They can't tell the difference. The good news is that the behaviors can be addressed, they can be unlearned, and they can be managed by therapy and home programs being taught to the caregiver. So it doesn't matter whether you're grandma and grandpa, you're the aunt and uncle, you're a foster parent or whatever, we will put together home programs for each child individually. They're not cookie cutter programs where we go, okay, here, you have one, you have one, you have, you know, no, it's not like that. Each child individually, when we're working with them and we look and see, this is really what we need to hone in on here, then I'm going to put a home program together on that. And it's got pictures, and it's all about play. What I want them to do, whether I want you to do wheelbarrow walking with them so that they're on their hands and you're holding their feet up. So they're putting weight through their shoulders and strengthening their upper body. So it's all stuff the kids would normally do anyway and play, but your children aren't necessarily doing them. So when you're thinking about, oh man, I have to go home and do a home program or I have to do therapy, you're playing and you're just incorporating this into playtime. When I did this with my daughter at home, I still had to work full-time when I went to school to become a therapist and raise two kids and have a husband and be trying to go to school full-time too. It was really difficult, and make sure I still continued her therapy, because even though she got to be five and now she's in school and she's getting some school therapy, that's just not enough of what they get during the day. Seeing me one time a week is not enough. It has to be ongoing throughout the week, and parents can learn to work that into a daily activity. So when I wanted to empty the dishwasher or something, that was her task, because now she had to sort the knives and the forks into the right container, and sorting for her was a difficulty. But she already had some to see to guide her where the forks went, where the knives went. And she didn't know that was therapy. She just thought she was helping mom in the kitchen, you know. So there's all kinds of things that you can do to incorporate it and not make it be where you have to sit right on top of them and make them do something. It can be done side by side. But then there are also things that you want to do where you are directly interacting with them. And you'll see that in some of the, okay, disclaimer. These suggestions and tips you're about to receive should really be started under the direction of a licensed professional therapist. Many children cry and resist and do not do well at first. They must be slowly introduced and monitored for positive changes and modified to each individual child. A child's cries should always be honored because they're scared. So even though I know a child desperately needs to be put on the swing in therapy, I'm not going to put that child on that swing and make them stay there for 5 minutes because I need to document that we did 5 minutes of swing time. No, I'm going to honor that child's abilities. They're scared. And if they tolerate 30 seconds, I'm like, woohoo, just made my day. And most of the time, I'm going to get on the swing with them, and that's how I'm going to start them. Whether we're sitting side by side or they're on my lap, somehow to where they're getting some compression from me, they feel safe, and we're both on the swing. And I might only gently start the swing side to side, or I might just use a rocking forward and back motion because they're used to that, because mom probably did that when they were little and they were being fed. So there's ways to introduce all these, but you want to do it slowly. If you just went, you know, nilly-willy with some of these suggestions and your kid's having a meltdown, you're going to be like, oh, this lady's crazy. Why is she telling me to do this? And that's why the disclaimer is there. A lot of this information I got is from the books that I have in the back. They're great reading, great tips. There's big handouts inside the books, things like that. And it's going to be even more informative. I've kind of taken a condensed version of all these and put it together to prepare this for everybody for tonight. All right, so a characteristic of the sensory disorders and the tips on your modulation disorder, this is the over-responsivity. They might cover their ears with loud noises. They might be sensitive to bright lights. They don't like to be touched unexpectedly. You cannot walk up to them and all of a sudden tap and say, hey, I want you to go over here, and you know, they're going to jump out of their skin if you're touching them. They might have poor tolerance to the hair washing, the frequently cries, they're hard to console. So as you notice, I put the tips on the opposite side. These are the times when you want to provide that slow rhythmic movement, like rocking or a swing, and just tone everything down. Everything goes quiet. Lights would be dimmed. You can use stress balls for the kids, let them squeeze. And then depending on the age of the child, you want to make sure it's you know, appropriate to the size of their hand, but you don't want it small enough that it's a swallowing risk. So you've got to be careful, you know your kids better than we do. We have stuffed beanbag toys, a weighted vest or a hat with a beanbag sewn into the top of the hat for a gentle weight. We do that with adults that have tremors, like Parkinson's and that. It's a central processing disorder, and when you put those beanbags in that cap, it dulls down the tremor that they're having when they're trying to feed themselves. Well, it also works for the kids to give them that compression. It's like they don't know where they're at in space in this big room. They're kind of lost in here and scared. So, and you want to go, you want to start light, just one beanbag at a time and try it out. Let's see. It helps them to organize their feelings of what's going on. You want to talk to the child ahead of time of what to expect. You know, okay, now about 10 minutes, we're going to go upstairs. It's going to be bath time. You remember what we do at bath time, and you probably all have your routine of what you do. Sometimes I would use bath time for reading time so that they would sit in the tub and play, and I was reading to them so that they would be calm and quiet. We did the same thing at potty training time. Their potty chair faced the toilet, and I sat on our toilet with the lid down and read to them while I was waiting for them to use the potty, so that they would stay there long enough to give it a try. And I'd reach over and turn the water on, you know, things like that to help them go tinkle. And everything has to be toned down. It has to be slowed down. They're not going to do everything in the same amount of time period that we're going to do it. As far as, you know, you're going to go in, you're going to get your bath, you're done, you're out. No, you got to slow it down. Make it enjoyable. Okay. This is the one talking about using the firm compression versus a light touch and dimming the lights. So when you approach a child or you talk to them, especially if you approach from the back, I usually put my hands on both shoulders and just kind of press down a little bit, just lightly, because they are kids. They, you know, some of them might weigh 35 pounds, some less, some more. And it depends on the need of that child, whether they need the light touch versus the hard touch. Most of my kids need the deeper compression and respond better to it. Alrighty, under responsivity. This is a delayed reaction time. They're slow to respond to their name. They have a flat affect much of the time, meaning that they don't really look like they enjoy life. They're never really smiling much. Maybe they don't cry much. There's just, it's kind of like, you know, just not there. They observe play or action on the playground with other kids, but they won't take part in it. Okay, that's more of an under-responsivity. The tips are using pushing and pulling activities like tug-of-war. Play with a shopping cart loaded with lots of toys. We use weighted bean bags and things like that, and then we play shopping. They're going around and they're picking up little grocery items from our shelves and things like that, and they're putting it in their shopping cart, but the shopping cart is already loaded and weighted down, so they have to push this. They love it. And of course, we're the person at the checkout counter, you know. Some get it, some don't, but as long as they're pushing that cart, that's the main thing. And we always ask them, can you go shopping like mom or dad? Can you push the grocery cart like mom or dad? And oh, they love that, if they think they're imitating you. You can use a scarf. I mean, none of this has to be planned. This can be off the cuff. You can be sitting in the living room and you're playing tug of war with a pillow off the couch. Just all of a sudden, it just kind of happened and it worked out. So you're tugging each other back and forth. No, give me that pillow. No, give me that pillow. So just don't put so much pressure on yourself that you have to schedule things and things like that. Let it just be come natural and kind of come off the cuff and say, hey, yeah, we do this kind of stuff anyway. You can do Play-Doh with that. I always recommend, you know, having the kids supervise all the time with Play-Doh, because we also have kids that like to put it in their mouth and stuff like that, so you have to be careful about that. I always keep an app on my phone with different kinds of toddler music. Some like faster music, some like slow music, some like it just in the background while we're working on something. So it's like I have to get to know each child as to what they respond to and what they want. Okay, so you're looking at the lights of the room, whether you would turn them up and have them bright, or if you have, dimmers at home, you could bring it down. There's mouth fidgets that are provided by speech therapists for kids that need that. They're always like kind of working on something with their mouth. It keeps them from putting their fingers in their mouth and other toys and things like that. And theirs are sized so that it's not going to be swallowed. Okay. They even talk about sitting, bouncing on the edge of the bed. And, of course, at therapy, we have these neat little round, it almost looks like a pillow, but it's in plastic. And one side is smooth and the other side has little bumps. So just depend on which child, who needs what. Sometimes we're just working on the input of what they're getting when they're sitting in that chair and they're kind of balancing themselves on that cushion. Sometimes we use it on the floor. A sensory-seeking child would be moving all the time. They touch everything. They take excessive risks. They're very demanding and hard to calm down. And a lot of these kids get expelled from daycare or school. And these are the ones that are squeezing brother and sister too hard because they don't know. They're slinging toys at the wall and toys break. I mean, and a lot of people think, you know, oh my gosh, you know, this little child's a brat and stuff like that. And I try to constantly educate people. Stop judging based on what you see. You have no clue what is going on in that little child's head and what is going on. So, and to me, that's the same thing as the handicapped parking spot. I hear a lot of people complain about people in handicapped parking spots. And they'll say, they walk just fine. And I saw them park in that thing. I said, they might have a respiratory problem. They might have COPD or asthma or something, and they can only walk short distances. There's a reason the doctor wrote that for them to have that. So, you know, it's all about that whole judgmental thing. A lot of the things that we use at school with the kids that have these excessive risk-taking is we have this big crash pad there. It's just like a great big mattress, but it's, you know, it's easy to clean and that kind of thing. That we'll have them jump on the trampoline and jump and crash into the pad, because they're getting that feedback that they need. So before I'm trying to work on handwriting skills or self-feeding skills, I'm going to have them do all that gross motor work, get all that out of their system. I let them jump off the trampoline and onto the crash pad, and sometimes I have to do it first to show them what it is. Yeah, that's kind of fun, let me tell you. And they think that's hilarious. But once you do it, then they're game. They're like, okay, I'm going to do it. Yeah. Let's see, what else we got here? Any kind of toys that you can have them running or walking with, such as the shopping carts. We have, you know, the one-footed scooters. Oh, my gosh. We have so many things there that we use with them, and we have, like, three or four different swings. PT uses the obstacle course items a lot, and that's to get them to slow down a little bit and be a little safer. We also have... it's like a ladder climb that simulates the monkey bars, the jungle gyms, the weighted vest. This I want to pass around, but I'll need them back because we definitely use these with all the kids. I wanted you to see them because you can actually make them at home if you have somebody in the family that sews well. I don't know where OT would be without Velcro. All of these open and closed with Velcro. And then you put weighted bean bags on the inside for your children. Now there is a percentage, you're not supposed to put more than, I think it's, not positive, I think it's 15% of their weight into one of these. But this gives them that compression, and it works and pushes down through their shoulders a little bit, because this is kind of hanging on them like they're wearing an apron. And it gives them, you can tape it, tack it around. We have different sizes. These were just two of the ones we had. They have them where you can buy them, too. But a lot of families, they can't afford that. So if you make one or you have somebody that's handy, you can make it so that it can be gradually adjusted based on that Velcro. So it's kind of growing with the child. But there is a percentage that you want to put the bean bags in there. It gives them that compression that they need. That you know, you can't always do it. You're busy. You're making supper. You're trying to get dinner on the table. You're trying to wash the clothes. You still have another life going on as well as trying to deal with this child and help them be everything they can be. So the weighted vest works good. That's when you want to do story time when they're wearing it. It helps sometimes during school when for children who are already in the school system. They have the underwear in the stores that are compression. I think it's called Under Armour. So, and they have them short-sleeved and long-sleeved, and you can send them off to school with that. And if it's cold, they can wear layered. So something else is over it. Nobody knows they're wearing it. But it just gives them that compression all day that they need while they're at school. And you know you've done what you can for them that day. Okay. A lot of people work with calming scents and things like that. I don't get into that at the therapy department at all, because you know, kids have so many different allergies that if we did something with smell for this one and the next one showing up 30 minutes later, they might be allergic to it. So we just don't even deal with that. We'd let the families handle that at home. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Yeah, we've had a couple of grandmas that have made vests for their kids, and they do have them available. It says, the one says with the spandex, and there's some in neoprene online that you can buy. But we've had grandmas go out and buy the material at like Joanne Fabrics, and they looked at them, they checked them out online, they looked at what we had, and then they went home and made their own pattern. Wow. Pretty impressive. All right, under motor disorder, which is a postural disorder, they fear movement due to the inadequate postural control, their decreased muscle tone, they lose their balance easily, they have difficulty using both hands or both feet at the same time. That's pretty common to see, especially with somebody who is low tone. And when I'm talking about tone, most of us in this room probably have normal tone, and it's just the amount of physical abilities that we have. Someone who is very low tone, their joints are very lax. They might even be double jointed and things like that. So it's a big difference from these kids. And a lot of them, these are the ones who you have to actually hold them and help them move that one foot to kick the ball. They can't even plan and get that going. So what the tips for this, for at home, in your own yard, or at the playground, you're going to hold the child on different toys and swings, and if you can fit on it, by all means, get on it with them. You want them to start to feel the movements, whether it's side to side or back and forth, because on a toy, they don't necessarily have a back on it, like they would with some of the swings, like at the adaptive playgrounds. So you want to start out holding them on there, and then eventually just holding them at the hip area and let them see, oh yeah, I got this, I can do this, and let them build their confidence. We always start either forward and backward or side to side. We just kind of experiment with each child and see which one works best for them. Some kids need spinning. They need to spin on that swing. And if you give them a couple of minutes of spinning on the swing, you can just about get them to do anything next because they got their spinning in. A good thing is to have them push someone else on a swing or a tricycle because, again, they're getting that heavy work that they're pushing through their upper body. They're using their lower body to ground themselves. So pulling another person on a blanket, sometimes we say it depends. If the cat is amenable, you know, and they're just laying there, sometimes you can just have the cat on a blanket and let them pull the cat gently, but they're getting that feeling of feedback, just like the tug of war. So, I mean, you have to pick and choose carefully, you know, what you think you can let them pull in the house. Knocking over a tower of blocks by swinging the arm or kicking the feet. That's one of the items where they can stabilize themselves and get one arm going. A lot of times they can't figure out how to do that, something that we all just take for granted. They can't figure that out. So sometimes it's just a matter of getting them started hand over hand, but it can take a lot of repetition. And I'm not saying, you know, you do it one or two times and then they've got it for the rest of the 6 weeks or something. No, it might be daily repetition until all of a sudden one day they're just doing it and you're like looking like, oh, yeah, they're doing it now on their own. I didn't have to stand there and do a hand over hand. Now they've got it. And that's how you move on. And with your home exercise programs, they're not going to overwhelm you with a ton of things to work on. They might pick one or two things for this week and say, let's just work on this for the next couple of weeks and see how progress goes. And when progress is being made there, then you can continue with it, but now we're going to focus on the next area that we want to make progress on. So you're building on that child's skills. So sensory perception and discrimination disorder, they do not feel the clothing that's twisted on their body. They hold things too tightly, does not feel food on the face. They have trouble judging their body in space, and they bump into things. They have trouble knowing how close or far things are. I see this a lot even in kids in grade school who are, you know, sent to their room, say, go get dressed for school, your clothes are laid out, and they come downstairs and everything's kind of yay-hooed on their body, and it doesn't matter to them. It's on. And to them, they're set and ready to go for the day. So that's where the learning process comes in, of having them stand in front of the mirror and say, well, let's tuck this shirt in, or, well, you know, maybe the button was one off, or, you know, the pants are up one side and down the other, and hanging out of shoes, these kind of things. So you're kind of showing them and guiding them how they could look at themselves. And these are for school-age kids. This isn't necessarily for toddlers or anything. This is for your school-age kids. Because they don't, I mean, it's hard enough to go through school and other kids are mean and judgmental, as well as other parents. So it's like you want your child to be able to present themselves as normal as everybody else thinks they are. You know, you don't want them to go to school looking haphazard. So as much as some days you might think, oh, at least they're dressed and off to school. But we want them to present the best. I can remember my youngest daughter, I was always after her during the puberty stage about deodorant. And she has a shunt in her head from hydrocephalus. So that extra cerebral spinal fluid has to go somewhere. And it's absorbed in her body through perspiration and urine. So her body odor during puberty was horrendous. And I was trying to be mom and help her not go to school and have this odor that was rather offensive. So I'd say, honey, did you scrub more than once under your underarms? Yes, Mom. You know, and she was so mad at me because I'd want her to wash it two and three times. And we got her prescription deodorant and all these things. But once the hormones settle down and she passed that stage, she's fine. She's 33 now. You know, she's married. But during those stages and trying to teach those things to her, that was very, very difficult. And, you know, kids, when they're that age, they don't want mom telling them what to do or how to dress or how to wash or anything else. But it was an ongoing process, you know. And to this day, only because I have the trained eye and because I know her as her mother, I still see little signs of, you know, how she's a little different than we are. But yet she goes out and functions in the world. She has a job. She has a 4-year degree from Bowling Green University. I have a 2-year degree. She has a 4-year degree. So, I mean, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel here. These kids can be successful. And I'm really, really proud of her. And she's married to a young man who she went to high school with. And they had liked each other then, but they were too shy to talk. So they didn't even dance together at the prom. And now all these years later, they found each other on Facebook and got married. And he's 100% disabled. So, and they're trying to have kids. So we'll see how that works out. I have a feeling Grandma's going to be involved a lot. But I'm real happy for her. All right. So on the perception disorder, with this trouble with the clothing and they don't know where they're at in space, you want to provide play where the child walks or crawls over, under, and through objects. And the way I did this and recreated this at home was I brought home empty boxes of different sizes. I'd go to the store and say, hey, you got any empty boxes? I'm moving. I wasn't moving. I was just looking for empty boxes of different sizes. And we'd get down on the floor and crawl through them. And the only reason I did that was because I had started out just using the end tables. Well, after knocking the lamp over so many times and breaking it, I didn't want to use my end tables anymore. So I went with the cardboard boxes. And then you can also let them color on it and decorate it and do whatever they want. And you could start with something as big as a refrigerator box and work your way down. And I don't know about you, but I can remember the first gift I gave one of my nephews, and it was a little, like a tyke size basketball game. He played with the box, not the basketball game. And that was long before I had my child, and I was like, I think next year he's getting a box. So keep those kinds of things in mind. If you see a box at work or something, bring it home. Again, this one also helps to wear the Lycra vest and have the compression for them. clipboards to hold paper for writing and coloring tasks. And the reason for that is they have a hard time putting their hand in one space and holding that paper down to write. Sometimes they need it on an incline, a gentle incline. And back in the day when I was raising my kid, you couldn't find an incline. You had to go to people that did woodworking and say, oh, can you make me an incline so my child can have that for school? Now they have all these different things available just readily for the public. You don't have to go to a specialty store to find it and get it. But your child, I'm going to use this as the example, I hope. It's built up so that on the back side, it's thicker here and real thin here, so it stays on an incline. That child has an easier time seeing what they're writing when they're working or coloring, rather than, you know, face down into that piece of paper. Let's see. Oh, for the kids with the fidgeting, you can teach them to do this for themselves too, depending on their age, is just self-massage themselves around their lips. Now, of course, you don't want them doing it at school, but, you know, that's the younger kids. You would be doing that for them at home. And, you know, just make it kind of playtime, you know. Tell them, here, you do mama, I'll do you, that kind of thing. And you're just massaging their cheeks. You're giving them some input. You're letting them know. Let's see. Yeah, kissing a teddy bear. You're just increasing that sensory. That's why they're using that little sensory nubby thing that the speech therapist gives them. Because they're looking for input. They need that input in here. And then when they get the textures of the food in there, they're like, ah. So if you can work on them with the stimulation around the mouth, it helps with the process of the self-feeding and the food textures. Okay, so the main thing I want you to take away from this is that you need to get down on the child's level physically and emotionally. Allow yourself to be silly. Allow yourself to over-exaggerate. Allow yourself to be laughed at. And the eye contact your child gives back to you and the verbalizations is worth all the effort in the world. Because I know I go home from work and with a child who has been nonverbal for 3 years, and after working with him for these 3 years, and he sees speech, he sees me in occupational therapy, he sees physical therapy, and he's coming along physically very well. But even with the compression and the different things, he is now coming over and he's pushing his body up next to mine. And this is a child who didn't want to be touched at all. That's his way of telling me he wants to get up on my lap. That's a big deal. And he lays down on the floor when he wants his compression. He lays down on the floor because what we started doing, we took like, it's like a therapy ball, like a yoga ball. And he lays down and we roll it on his back from his shoulders to his feet. And then he rolls over. He flops over just like a fish. And then we give him compression from the front side to his feet. And when he's had enough, he gets up and he's ready to go do the next thing. But he has learned, I need that and that makes me feel good. So he's signaling to us. When he goes and lays down on the floor, I say, okay, let me get the ball. But now, even working with him with music in the background, we are working on one of the songs is The Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round. So I want him doing the motion of the wheels on the bus go round and round, and the windshield wipers go swish, 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 and the baby's going wee, wee, wee. So I'm trying to get him to do this, and a lot of this is hand over hand. But that child is now saying, and mom is reporting to us, that when they get to an intersection and he sees a school bus, he's saying, bah, bah. And that's his third word. He's saying mom and dad, and he's starting to say bus now. And that's a big improvement for him because this is the last part of the puzzle that we're trying to get is that speech. So even though he's in occupational therapy with me, I'm still going to encourage his speech while he's with me. And he also has a communication board. And he's doing really well with that. But a lot of times we just set it down because I want him to not depend on that all the time. I want him to communicate and make eye contact with me. And he is actually, when he's trying to say, one of the ones I wanted to tell you about that has worked so well with him. When I'm giving him compression in his shoulders and he turns, and you can tell when they like it because they turn and it's just like, okay, go ahead. You know, they want you to do it because it feels good. Then I start writing, and I'll do like a circle on his back, and I repeat circle. And I might do this 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Sometimes I'll do a square, keep repeating that, and give him compression in between. This is when he suddenly starts to try to speak, when he's getting that writing on his back. And I also work down what we call the paraspinals. If you feel the spinal cord going down the back, you don't want to go down right the middle of the spine. You want your fingers on each side of the spine. And just kind of go down it. Give it a little input along that spine. It's amazing what that does. I mean, it's just input. You could be watching TV. They might be sitting with you. Yeah, that is something I did not, that's something I've been using in the past year that I have found worked well, and I forgot to add it to this handout because I had this handout made from last year's talk. But they respond really well to that, going down their spinal cord like that, but you're going down beside it. So, you know, like I said, don't stress out. Use the time if you're watching TV and they're being quiet and you're sitting with them, down the back you go. You just do little things. You might compress into their shoulders while they're sitting there. If they're crying and having tantrums and stuff like that, try those techniques then where you're compressing down into the shoulder. And if they allow you to do that, they might allow you to reach in and give them a nice tight hug. If they think that you're angry or whatever, they might push and try to get away. So you might want to try the ball. If they lay down on the floor and they're having a fit and they're crying, take the ball and roll the ball on them, whether it's on their belly, on the front side or the back side. It may just calm them right down. So a lot of times, you know, you kind of have to wait them out a little bit too, as long as they don't go on for too long. But I think that pretty much concludes. Let me double check here. Yeah, I have some extra things in here just of movement. These are some of the things like I'll give the parents. Now this is a little more advanced. These are for the older kids, the crab walk and the wheelbarrow. But these are all just different things that we would give as a handout. But on the handout, say for your individual child, it'll have your child's name on it, the therapist who created it, and different pictures of what they're suggesting to work on at home. Some of the kids, like they have the hand fidget tools, the vibrating toys. We have a sandbox there. Some of the kids absolutely hate it when they first start because of the texture, but when you work on them and you give them compression, and there's all kinds of nice toys in that sandbox that they want to touch. So sometimes they just stand there and they watch you at first, and when they get their hands near it, and they'll do anything to get that toy out of there and not touch that sand, that's my opportunity. I take a little handful of sand and I just drizzle it over their hand, and they kind of jump for a second, but then I dig my hands down in the sand and I keep showing them. Ooh, and I make fun noises. And eventually, it might take 3 or 4 visits, and that's just one of the many things I'm doing during that session. But pretty soon, those kids have their hands down in the sandbox, digging the toys out and playing with little trucks that are going to dump the sand. So these are not miracle things or cures or anything. This is things that we're doing with repetition until the kids have accepted it and they're taking it in. And they make progress. So there is a light there. So I think these are all in your handout too. Yeah, like lavender and vanilla are considered a very calming scent. Yeah, some people have used a scarf with mom or dad's cologne on it if they go to preschool or daycare away because you have to go to work. They'll give them a scarf or something with your scent on it so they can keep it with them all day. Even if it's tucked in a pocket, some of them wear it around, tied around their neck like a Stetson or whatever, you know. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that you can do with it. I put all the references there where I got a lot of this information besides what we do, and we go to courses and we're continually learning. We are required to do 20 CEUs every 2 years. And I'll tell you, ever since I got out of school, I do about 48 CEUs every 2 years, and I've been doing this for 21 years because there's so much to keep learning. But I have a nice mixture of kids and adults because grandma hair wouldn't last all day if I had to do kids all day back to back. So, and Patterson Medical, they are online. They do have the weighted vest. They have some of the things where you would, the sensory for the mouth and all that. And this is all in your handout, these You can go online, get ideas, and get prices, but I always tell everybody, check it out on Amazon afterwards, because you'll probably find it someplace else cheaper. And sometimes you can just get the idea from there and then and make it at home, or somebody in the family who's a sewer or whatever. So you can look for a better price. Because as much as I love that company, and sometimes we order from there, sometimes I order from there, I don't want to pay the high prices. I can't afford that. And I buy stuff that I want to use with the kids that maybe is not on our budget at the hospital this year. So if I want it, I'm just going to buy it. And I keep it at my desk, and when that child comes, I have it to use with that child. And so it's just like being a teacher. How many teachers go out and spend some of their own money making their classrooms better and getting things for the kids? And it's the same thing with therapists. So, and believe me, a lot of therapists are parents of children with special needs. I'd like to do my own research study on that, because it is amazing when you start asking people, so what made you become a therapist? A lot of them either had a brother or sister, or they have a child with special needs. So don't feel intimidated when we're recommending and saying, try this at home or try that at home. We have lives too outside of our job. And I had my daughter to raise too, and I always felt like I was being judged. When I was the mom who was taking my child for services, I always thought, that I'm under a microscope. They're looking at everything I'm doing. So I really get it with the parents, and I try to reassure them all the time that we're not judging. We're here to help. So, and if you're seeing problems, bring it to their attention. And if they don't know the answer to it, they have coworkers they can go to and say, hey, what would you guys do in this situation? Because we don't have all the answers either. So, but that concludes my talk. And if anybody has any questions that you wrote down that maybe I didn't address, feel free. Yes?
We don't